It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. In September, Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman announced that the State Board of Pardons would be expediting the process to be pardoned for nonviolent marijuana-related offenses. Lieutenant Governor, we spoke to you at that time, and you encouraged people to apply for the pardons. So have they been taking you up on your offer?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, we are on track to more than quadruple the number of applications versus the time of my predecessor. And we just put our first class through in just under 6 months. And that's, you know, with the pandemic. So we've created a mechanism that can get these low-level marijuana offenses through as quickly as possible.
6 months compared to what had it been?
Well, it could take two and a half years or longer in many cases.
About how many? You mentioned the first class, a couple dozen, I believe?
Yeah, the first class was smaller because we're just getting the word out. I mean, I would like it to be even more rapid, and we want everybody to understand that there was the same level of scrutiny given for a low-level marijuana conviction as for something that might be more serious, and that's just crazy. I think we can all agree that to have your life damaged for consuming a plant that is now legal in over a dozen states and territories in the United States, and where it's actually medicine in Pennsylvania, and I'm sure we'll eventually get to the point where it's just legal outright. It's just counterproductive on so many different levels.
You have a ballpark figure about how many people might be eligible?
Yeah, thousands and thousands and thousands. And until there's a bulk legislative expungement, this is the only mechanism possible in Pennsylvania. And of course, my goal, my dream would be full legalization. But in the interim, you have the ability right now to apply for free for a pardon. And we have the ability now to streamline and expedite that and handle it in bulk.
As you know, it took a while for medical marijuana to be legalized. What might you see come first, expungement of records or legalization of recreational marijuana?
You know, man, I'd take one or both. I would love to see decriminalization. I would love to see expungement, and I would love to see it legalized. There's already a thriving cannabis market in Pennsylvania, but unfortunately, it's an illegal one. And we don't know the purity. We don't know the actors involved, where it's coming from. What we do know is that it's not being taxed, and it is pulling people into an illegal marketplace that can often lead to charges, baseless charges, and it's disproportionately enforced with African Americans. This whole idea that we could liberate an entire segment of our society, people that consume marijuana now illegally, again, I don't understand the logic of a prohibitionist mindset with respect to cannabis in Pennsylvania.
You mentioned that for this first class of pardons, that expedited pardons, that you learned some things and you could tweak some things. What might the changes be?
Once it meets a few basic sets of criteria, you can just, boom, rack them, pack them, stack them. It's like this idea that a basic marijuana possession or drug paraphernalia conviction requires a lot of deliberation or anything along those lines, as long as it doesn't fall into a violent situation or you are a major trafficker of hundreds of pounds, it really comes down to just common sense.
So why is it important to get the pardon? The people that have committed the offense have most likely paid their penalty, whatever that might have been. Why is it important to actually get the pardon?
Because it can impact your ability to get a job, for starters. It can impact your ability to volunteer at your child's school. It can impact your ability to get a clearance for something else or housing. It's a mark on your record for consuming a plant that, like I said, is now legal increasingly in more and more states across the country. It makes no sense. It's one of the most simple steps that we could take from a criminal justice reform that would free African Americans up from the bias in law enforcement. And it would also lead to an enormous amount of revenue. I mean, we are looking at a substantial budget deficit here in Harrisburg, and we are literally leaving hundreds of millions of dollars every year on the table and being able to maintain the purity and safety of it as well.
Anything else we should know?
I just would want everybody within the sound of this interview to realize that if you or anyone else you know has a marijuana conviction, get a pardon. Don't let it hold you back another day. Until there's mass expungement, until we get to achieve legalization, this is the way that you can free yourself from an unproductive and unjust charge off your record. And it won't cost anything. It doesn't cost a thing.
John Fetterman is the Lieutenant Governor of Pennsylvania. Thanks so much for your time.
Oh, thank you.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. The Trump administration this week introduced new restrictions on visas that allow immigrants to work temporarily in the U.S. Those limits took effect yesterday. What's at stake for residents and businesses in our region? Shayla Velez Martinez is a professor of immigration and refugee law at the University of Pittsburgh, and she directs their immigration clinic. In April, the president signed an immigration order affecting people seeking to legally migrate to the U.S. His new action extends that until the end of this year and expands it to include some guest worker visas. Professor, these visas include H-1Bs for specialty occupations, plus visas for spouses, for temporary non-agriculture workers, for transfers within a company, and even for exchange visitors. How do you think these restrictions will play out in Pittsburgh's high-tech industry?
So economic activity in our region is really tied to innovation and technology. And the H-1B visas, for example, are the visas that foreign nationals use to enter into the workforce for a specific amount of time. So let's say they stay in the United States for 3 years or 6 years, which is the maximum amount of time that you can stay in the United States with an H-1B visa. And that is important for the tech industry. It is really related to computer science, software development, engineers. And these are the people that have been allowing us to work remotely during COVID-19. It would also affect the legal industry because we have a large number of law firms that work in business immigration. So it's really a wide range in impact for us.
So will this limit on H-1Bs that you just mentioned, will that affect people already here who have H-1Bs and they won't get extended? Will it remove their H-1Bs, or will this be no more additional H-1Bs?
The proclamation will only apply to an individual that is outside the United States on the effective date of the proclamation. Those people that are already here are not affected, or those people that had their visas on hand before the proclamation entered into effect on June 24th.
So it will affect maybe the flow of new talent into our country?
Certainly. It affects the flow of new talent. It affects the ability for colleges and universities to recruit new talent. And you have to understand that the United States is in a competition with Australia, Great Britain, Canada for this talent. It's not a given that everyone is going to come to the United States. This is a competition for talent, and the opportunity for people to create corporations and economic activity, it's important for the universities to be able to continue to recruit.
So are any schools, whether it's Pitt, your university, or another, are they really in position right now to add staff during the course of this pandemic?
I think that the pandemic is really a challenge for everybody to still try to create a welcoming environment to continue to bring international scholars into the universities. That diversity of talent, it's key for both Pitt and CMU.
The administration says the limitations are because of the high unemployment in our country, because of the shutdown due to the pandemic. Your reaction to that reasoning?
Shows a lack of understanding of how our economy works. Because if you ask me, what are some of the most important industries while everybody is trying to work remotely, is certainly the information technology industry, the software engineers, the computer scientists, electrical engineers, all the people that are going to be affected by this new regulation.
You mentioned the service industry. Is that where a lot of newcomers are employed?
So these are not positions that have been taken from U.S. workers. Those are positions that were always available, and they were not being filled by U.S. workers. So I don't know how that changed, because if we have an economy that is coming back on track, the same amount of workers are going to be needed. And there's just not enough United States workers to fill those positions that are, by their nature, temporary. So these workers come for 2 or 3 months, and then they go back to their country. This is not permanent, stable jobs with benefits. That is what you want for American workers in the long run.
In addition to these limits, these restrictions on visas, the Department of Homeland Security issued a regulation that would bar most asylum seekers from attaining work permits. How does this impact the overall process of people seeking asylum? They might be granted asylum, but they can't work. How is that going to operate?
I have been trying to grapple with this because it seems to me very cruel. There is a 2-year limit on the work permit once it's issued. It revises the eligibility for employment authorization to exclude people that entered what we call enter without inspection, which are a vast number of asylum seekers for many reasons entered throughout the border of the United States, not necessarily through a port of entry. People that have been arrested or convicted of certain crimes, and that might include driving under the influence.
Driving without a license.
Anyone that has committed a serious non-political crime, it's barred from asylum anyways. And it's important for them to be able to work and provide for their families while they're waiting in the United States.
Final question. Do you expect any legal challenges to any of these orders?
To all of them. I think that many IT corporations and multinational corporations will seek an opportunity to file lawsuits. This also affects, for example, intercompany transferee. So if Google has a managerial executive employee in an office in Great Britain and they want to bring that person to the United States to run a new office, for example, that is banned by this new proclamation. The ability of multinational corporations to transfer their managers to offices already in the United States, which also has an impact on the ability of those companies to generate more business and create new opportunities for American workers.
Shayla Velez-Martinez is a professor of immigration and refugee law at the University of Pittsburgh. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kevin.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. As protests against police brutality sweep across the country, polling suggests most Americans support law enforcement reform. In our year-long split ticket series, we've been asking 4 voters about the issues that could sway their decision at the ballot box. This month, 90.5 WESA's Lucy Perkins says the protests deepened at least one voter's commitment to be heard in November.
2 years ago, when Savannah Henry first arrived at the University of Pittsburgh, a black teenager named Antoine Rose was killed by a white police officer in East Pittsburgh. She says that ignited her activist work, but her distrust of police goes back further.
When I see police, I get scared. I don't like being around police. They make me uncomfortable. If a cop's behind me on the road, I get terrified.
Savannah's going to be a junior this fall and is a progressive. She'd been interning with Planned Parenthood this summer in Erie when she started getting messages about the death of George Floyd in Minneapolis.
I didn't realize how big of a deal it was, just because I feel like as a black person in this country, every time you hear about a black person being killed by a police officer, which happens all the time, you can't let yourself get super, super overwhelmed about each death, because if that was the case, then you wouldn't be able to function as like a human.
But when protests started, she wanted to be there. So she and her friend borrowed a car and drove to Pittsburgh.
They don't lynch us in the trees.
They don't lynch us in the streets.
They kill our babies on the street.
So I wore 2 masks the whole day because I was nervous just about getting sick. But I don't know. I just feel like things are so terrible in the world right now. I would risk getting sick to like stand up for what I know is right.
Democrat Linda Bishop is retired and lives with her husband in Mars, Pennsylvania. They haven't been to any protests because they're both vulnerable to the coronavirus. Still, she's paying close attention to what's happening.
We can't ignore it. Black and brown people have never been able to ignore it. It's part of their daily life, the discrimination and the racism that exists. But white people have had the privilege of being able to tune it out. Well, you know what? We can't do that anymore.
Linda says she feels her own white privilege more strongly these days. She's contacting her elected officials and doing grassroots organizing around the November election. Both Linda and Savannah want to see an overhaul of how police departments are structured and think redirecting money from police budgets is a good place to start.
We've gutted social programs in communities of color over the years and yet reinvested all that money in police. Well, let's reverse that.
Republican Ed Swiklinski thinks President Trump's done a good job responding to the protests, but says the president's snide comments just give Democrats ammunition.
I think that if you don't like Trump, you're going to see that as he's part of the problem, that he's just a white guy with white privilege and he's not woke.
Ed is in his 40s and lives in Bethel Park with his wife and kids. He's been doing some side work in IT while he looks for a full-time job. Ed does think police brutality needs to stop, but does not see it as a symptom of systemic racism, and he says he doesn't understand what changes the Black Lives Matter movement wants.
If you had 4 years to get together a cogent thought, I see nothing. It leads me to believe that Black Lives Matter does not really care about solving a problem.
All lives matter. If Black Lives Matter, stop the violence within your own race.
Republican Mary Henze lives in Jefferson Hills, is in her 50s, and has been on disability for about a decade. Mary says she was heartbroken when she saw the video of George Floyd and thinks cops with bad records should be fired. But she also thinks that white people are victims of police violence more than people of color.
There are a lot of people who get into police work because they need the feeling of power. He was wrong. He was a bad cop. But there are also cases of white men. They just don't hit the media.
But many studies find the opposite. An analysis by the Washington Post shows that Black people are killed by police at twice the rate of whites. And Savannah Henry is upset with Trump's response to the protests against police brutality.
I've never felt such deep, deep, deep hatred for a person in my whole entire life. I don't know how people can ignore the things he's done.
Savannah voted for Bernie Sanders in this month's primary. But Trump's response to the protests has done what even her fears about climate change and a conservative Supreme Court didn't do, convince her to vote for Joe Biden this November. I'm Lucy Perkins, 90.5 WESA News.
And for today, that is The Confluence, where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. If you enjoy what you're hearing, there's even more to read on our website at WESA.FM, where our newsroom is rounding up everything you need to know about how the coronavirus pandemic is affecting our region and beyond. You can find more from this and past episodes of The Confluence online at WESA.FM/Confluence and through your favorite podcast app. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Joya Zenkovich, and Doug Shugerts. Until next time, I'm Kevin Gavin. Hope you have a good day of good news.